Hey, I'm Pastor Joel, and I just want to say thank you for downloading or streaming this message today. My prayer for you is that you're blessed by the content that you hear. As a church, our desire is to make disciples of Jesus, and we do that by helping people to trust and follow Him in every aspect of their daily life. So if this is something that blesses you, we just hope that you'll feel free to share this with others so that they might be encouraged and challenged by it as well.
I will extol the Lord at all times. His praise will be always on my lips. I will glory in the Lord. Let the afflicted hear and rejoice. Glorify the Lord with me. Let us exalt His name together. I sought the Lord, and He answered me. He delivered me from all of my fears. Those who look to Him are radiant, and their faces are never covered with shame. This poor man called, and the Lord heard him. He saved him out of all his troubles. The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear Him, and He delivers them. Taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the one who takes refuge in Him. Fear the Lord, you His holy people. For those who fear Him lack nothing. The lions may grow weak and hungry, but those who seek the Lord lack no good thing. Come, my children, listen to me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. Whoever of you loves life and desires to see many good days, keep your tongue from evil and your lips from telling lies. Turn from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. The eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and His ears are attentive to their cry. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil, to blot out their name from the earth. The righteous cry out, and the Lord hears them. He delivers them from all of their troubles. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. The righteous person may have many troubles, but the Lord delivers him from them all. He protects all his bones. Not one of them will be broken. Evil will slay the wicked. The foes of the righteous will be condemned. The Lord will rescue His servants. No one who takes refuge in Him will be condemned. Join me in prayer. Hey God, thank you for reminding us of your faithfulness today in so many ways. And I pray that all of us will remember that you are here with us through everything, no matter if we can feel your presence or not. Amen.
Amen. Thanks so much, Alexis. Hey, church, I just want to tell you, you sound good singing this morning. Y'all did great. Hey, I'm glad you're here. If you have a Bible, go ahead and turn to 1 Samuel chapter 18. We started a teaching series last week called Afflicted, which I'm sure is a topic everybody is excited to talk about. But we talked about this idea that we all go through really hard things in life. And we're looking at the life of David through this series and the things that he went through that were difficult and challenging, just hardships that he faced all along the way. And yet in David's life, God taught him some perspectives about things that I think it's important for us to really learn about what it looks like to be someone who can follow God even when things are not going our way, even when things get hard, even when there's challenges, even when things rise against us that we wouldn't want to be part of our life. And so in Psalm chapter 119, verse 71, David wrote the words and said, "It's good for me to be afflicted, because it taught me to follow your decrees." And so David gains this perspective that he might learn the decrees of God through the afflictions that he went through. He said, "God, I'm going to go through hard things, and God, you're going to take me through hard things, and you're going to allow me sometimes to go through hard things. And my perspective and the scope that I want to get in the middle of all of this is that you have something that you want to do to teach me how to be more in line with you as a result." And so in David's affliction, he drew close to God. He learned a perspective that we all need, and that's this, that God uses times of affliction to grow our faith and to deepen our trust in Him. And so when we walk through the fires of life, we're going, "God, what are you trying to do to teach me to grow in my faith, to trust you more fully, to be centered around who you are?" No affliction is fun, right? Like none of us would wish for that. None of us want those things. But my guess is that all of us have been through things that we've walked through in life that are incredibly challenging, incredibly hard. Something that you went, "I didn't really desire that to happen, but it was a part of my life." And so those things might look like a long-term illness that you faced. It could look like the loss of a loved one along the way. Maybe it's the death of a dream that you had for your life. There could be any number of things that come when you start talking about afflictions that are coming into your life that are just causing you turmoil and anxiety. And so when we look at David, we're going to see a specific area of his life today. And for the next several weeks, we're going to just be talking about specific places in David's life where he faced afflictions and what he learned as a result. And hopefully then what we can take as followers of Jesus today and say, "I want my life to be someone who's going to follow God no matter what." And so for David, God used to define him. He had prepared him to be the king. He was going to use these circumstances and these situations to really refine David, to make him the king that he wanted him to be. But in the course of that, the affliction we're going to talk about today for David was that he had the affliction of an enemy, right? And so this is going to be true throughout David's life. He's going to face enemies from all sides. And in a lot of ways, that's military enemies. David is the king, so he has control of the military. He's going to go to war against other nations. Nations are going to come to war against him. And there's going to be so many times that he talks about enemies. That one may be a little tougher for us to identify with because probably none of us are going, yep, get the cavalry. I got some enemies. We're going to go attack and we're going to take charge and we're just going to take our army out and go fight their army. That's not the reality for most of us. But David also has an enemy that he faces that comes from a personal relationship. And that's more what I want us to see today. And there's one person in particular that plays a devastating role in David's life, and that's King Saul. Saul is someone who David knows personally, intimately, has a relationship with, and yet he becomes an enemy to David. And he sees David as his enemy. And so the question we want to really ask is, well, what do we do when we have an enemy in our life? Now, in case you've been fortunate enough in your life to make it through and not have anybody that you consider an enemy, or nobody's ever called you an enemy, and you're kind of going, that word, it sounds familiar, but I don't know what it means. Let me define it for you. An enemy is this. It's one that is antagonistic to another, especially in seeking to overthrow or injure or confound an opponent. Right, so that's the Merriam-Webster way of defining what an enemy is. Let me give you my definition of an enemy. It's one who wants to hurt or wound you in some way, destroying your peace and or your reputation. If you've ever had a moment in your life where somebody has caused hardship to you where your peace has been stolen away because you never quite know who's around the corner waiting for you, or they've come against you and attacked your reputation, your integrity is at stake. I can remember one time, and I don't have a lot of times in my life I can look back on and just think that I have enemies or people who hate me or didn't like something that I was doing, but I can remember a specific instance when I was doing student ministry that I had a family that just kind of turned against me a little bit because of some things that they perceived that I did or didn't do to help one of their kids, and it became really difficult and complicated. To the point that I wondered along the way, is this going to be it for ministry for me? Am I going to just be done? Because it was hard. And it came to the place where I just never knew, being in this kind of smaller community, was I going to go into town and see one of them? It was complicated. Go into a restaurant, you're always looking around going, are they here? Is anybody here from the family? Is Walmart, is anybody going to attack me from behind? Like, I don't know what's going to happen wherever I am in the community. And the anger of the family and some specific people just boiled up to the place where you were like, I don't know if they saw me in public what they would do. And it was frightening. I mean, David's going to feel like that. He's going to have this person who comes against him and he's going to bring pain to him. And maybe your enemy isn't somebody who's going to physically want to hurt you or kill you. It could be somebody who's just looking to sabotage you at work and keep you from getting a promotion. Your enemy could be somebody, if you're a student, who's going, man, they lie about me and they talk bad about me at school and there's rumors flying all over the place about me and my integrity's at stake. You could have a lot of different ways to think about an enemy. It could be a family member who every time you go to a family gathering, they just try to hijack the situation and make it miserable on everybody. Don't raise your hand if that's your situation, but like, you know who I'm talking about, right? Like, there are these people who come against and they would say, I'm against you. I have this enemy type of relationship with you. They just want to hijack things. It could be that you have some things like David and Saul that get complicated. And so this morning, we're going to cover a lot of ground in David's life, so much so that we're not going to be able to read all of it. I'm going to highlight some things and I'm going to overview some things, and then we're going to look at one or two specific passages together. But we're going to cover a lot of ground this morning. And here's what I would encourage you to do this coming week. Go back yourself and read 1 Samuel chapter 18 through 31. It covers the end of the chapter, or the end of the book of 1 Samuel. And here's what you're going to get as you see that. We're going to read that, and you could sit down, and in a matter of 10 or 15 minutes, probably you can read 1 Samuel 18 through 31, maybe 20 or 25 minutes if you're a slow reader like I am. But you're going to get through it pretty quickly, and you're going to go, whoa, what an incredible story. There's so much going on there. You can make a movie out of this stuff, right? Like, this is high intrigue, crazy stuff that's going on in the life of David and Saul. And what we miss sometimes, because we can read it so quickly and get through it so fast, is we don't realize how long of a period of time is covered in the pages of Scripture. In David's life, from what we're going to read this morning in chapter 18 till the end of chapter 31, is about 7 or 8 years of David's life. Of just constant turmoil, of pressure, of affliction, of being chased and pursued, of having an enemy that wants to literally destroy him. So if you can imagine 7 years, 8 years of your life being on the run. That's what we're going to see from David. But let's catch up to the story and see how David lives with the affliction of an enemy. Here's what's taken place already if you were to go back earlier in 1 Samuel. Saul has been anointed king, but he disobeys God. He does some things that don't make God pleased with the way that he's leading the nation of Israel. He goes against the commands of God. And so God tells Samuel, who had anointed Saul as king, I want you to go and I want you to tell the king that I'm going to remove him from Israel. He's going to carry out his days on the throne, but his family is not going to inherit the kingdom. I'm going to replace him with someone else. And then Samuel is instructed by God to go and find a family that he's going to choose one person from the family to pick as the next king of Israel. The entire family's brought in front of him, multiple kids, some big guys in the family, guys that Samuel thinks, man, that's got to be the king. And God continues to say, no, not that one, no, not that one, no, not that one. Until finally they get to the end of the line and there's no more people to choose from. And he goes, is there any more kids you have? And Jesse says, well, I've got one more son. He's out in the field with the sheep. And they're like, bring him. So the youngest son comes and God says, that's the one. Anoint him as king. And so Samuel anoints David right there in front of his family. You're going to be the next king of Israel. We know the story of what happens with David. Most of us probably know that David goes and he visits his brothers who are on a battlefield at some point in the future. And there's a giant that's been coming out every day and just screaming at the nation of Israel to come and fight him. And nobody will. Nobody will go and do hand-to-hand conflict with this giant until David steps up and goes, I'll fight him. This guy doesn't have any place in Israel. My God's bigger than that giant. And so David goes and he fights Goliath and he takes Goliath down. And God wins a huge victory that day. And from that point on, David becomes a servant in Saul's kingdom. At first, he's brought in because when God removed his spirit from Saul, he allowed a tormenting spirit to come in and give Saul just heartache and pain. And he afflicted him. And he's constantly under attack by this satanic demon that comes against him. So David is brought into the palace to play his harp. And he just plays music. And they find that the music that David plays soothes the king. And so David's got his place in the kingdom. And finally, he continues to also get a place in the military. And he rises in the ranks of the military. After killing Goliath, he's placed in charge of a lot of the armies of Israel. And eventually he becomes the captain of the king's guard. David is in a prominent place to the point that Saul offers him to become his son-in-law. He offers him one of his daughters in marriage. And so what David is now rising into these places of position and authority and power, and that's what we're going to start to read together this morning in chapter 18, 1 Samuel chapter 18, and see how the conflict between these two really heats up. So if you will, check out 1 Samuel chapter 18, starting in verse 1. It says, after David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one with him in spirit with David. Jonathan is Saul's son. He loved him as himself. They become best friends. From this day, Saul kept David with him and did not let him return home to his family. And Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing and gave it to David, along with his tunic and even his sword and his bow and his belt. Whatever mission Saul sent him on, David was so successful that Saul gave him a high rank in the army. This pleased all the troops and Saul's officials as well. When the men were returning home, after David had killed the Philistine, the women came out from the towns of Israel to meet King Saul with singing and dancing, with joyful songs and with timbrels and lyres. And as they danced, they sang, Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands. And Saul was very, what? Angry. This refrain displeased him greatly. They've credited David with tens of thousands, he thought, but me with only thousands. What more can he get but the kingdom? And from that time on, Saul kept a close eye on David. The next day, an evil spirit from God came forcefully on Saul. He was prophesying in his house while David was playing the lyre, as he usually did. But Saul had a spear in his hand, and he hurled it, saying to himself, I'll pin David to the wall. But David eluded him twice. And Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with David, but had departed from Saul. So he sent David away from him and gave him command over 1,000 men. And David led the troops in their campaigns. And in everything he did, he had great success because the Lord was with him. And when Saul saw how successful he was afraid of him. But all Israel and Judah loved David because he led them in their campaigns. So here's the first thing that I want us to see this morning as we're talking about how this enemy is brought into David's life. And you've probably experienced the same thing on some level, but here's the thing that I want you to get and write down if you want to. David's trouble initially came from his successes. Right? Like David's trouble comes from the fact that he's got success and he's gained success. And if you catch the song that the people are singing about David and Saul, Saul heard it loud and clear, right? Did you catch what he said? Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands. And Saul's going, wait a minute, I'm the king here. I should be getting credit for this. Have you ever got a bad song stuck in your head? This is the refrain that Saul can't get out of his head. This is Baby Shark to him, right? It's like Saul's slain his thousands, right? Like this is what Saul is hearing. And he can't get it out of his head. And it infuriates him that David's getting this kind of credit. And he even goes, what's left for him but to get the kingdom? And so we see that the moment comes where success breeds enemies. And for David, and that's true for us too, success almost always breeds enemies. If you gain a measure of success in your life somewhere, watch out. Somebody doesn't like it. Somebody's going to be frustrated and upset with you. Somebody is not going to appreciate the fact that you got the raise, that you got the promotion. Somebody's going to be looking at you and they're not going to be happy about things going on in your life. Even petty things where they might go, I don't like that you bought a house and I didn't get to buy one. I don't like that you had a grandchild and I haven't had one yet. I don't like that you got pregnant and I didn't. I don't like that something good is happening in your life and I'm not experiencing the same thing. Your successes will, on some level, whether it's right or not, breed an enemy. And for David, that's what happens. David becomes vastly successful and Saul hates him for it. But if you noticed what was going on here, it wasn't just that there was jealousy from Saul to David. What else do you see? Fear. Two different times it says he feared David. He's afraid of him. In verses 12 and 15, we see that he's afraid. First, he's afraid because it was apparent God was with David, but had rejected Saul. He sees the Spirit of God on David. He knows what that looks like because he had one time had God's Spirit on his life. But because of his disobedience, it was removed from him. And now he sees the Spirit of God in power in David's life. And he knows that and he's afraid of that. Second, he's afraid of David because of the success that he was achieving. And so what we find next is that Saul starts desiring to eliminate David as a problem. He's an enemy. I'm going to kill him. I'm going to get rid of him. And what you're going to find in the next couple of chapters is that no fewer than 6 or 7 times, Saul tries to kill David. And so we see it play out. The first way is that he decides as a way to say, David, if you want to marry one of my daughters, here's the price that it's going to cost you. I want you to go out and kill 100 Philistines, right? And I'm going to give you guys the very PG version of this story. If you really want to read it, go and look in 1 Samuel chapter 18, all right? We got some younger kids in the room this morning, so I'm not going to give you the Bible version of it. But here's the PG version. Go kill 100 Philistines and come back. And if you do that, you can marry my daughter. Saul's thought is David's going to die in battle. But David comes back and he's killed 200. He's like, here we go. This is what we got. Now I get to marry your daughter, right? So now Saul has David as a son-in-law. Well, later David is playing the harp in Saul's presence. And in 1 Samuel 18, here's what we saw. He's playing the harp and Saul becomes angry. He's frustrated with David. And what's he do? He takes the spear that's beside him and he hurls it at David. His desire is to pin him against the wall. And it says, not once, but twice. Which to me, reading between the lines a little bit, says this, that the spear hurled by David's head stuck into the wall and David was like, whoa, what just happened? Pulled it out and went, hey man, you missed. Here's your spear back. And then he went back to playing the harp again. And then he throws it again and misses the second time. Like that's just kind of how it reads. It's going, he tries to pin him to the wall multiple times. And finally, David goes, this isn't a safe place. I'm out of here, right? So what does Saul do? A third time in another instance, he throws the spear at David's head, trying to pin him to the wall. He's trying to kill him. David finally gets the clue. The palace isn't safe. I need to go home. So at home, Saul sends his military leaders and goes, hey, kill him in his bed. Go to his house and kill him. But his wife, Saul's daughter, Michal, finds out about the plot and tells David, if you don't escape tonight, you're dead in the morning. So David escapes. The men come. He's not there. This time he flees. He runs. And what we're going to see for the next 7 years of David's life is that he hides in caves. He's going to go into the desert of Israel and he's just going to hide. And he's going to be pursued over and over and over again by King Saul. So as you read the story from 18 to 31, you're going to see all of the times that Saul pursues him. But when we think about what David is perceiving and what he's going through in this moment, we have the Psalms that David writes. Many of the Psalms that David writes take place when he's hiding from Saul in the caves. And so here's one of the first ones that we have recorded, Psalm 142. This is as David has fled for his life. He says, "I cry aloud to the Lord. I lift up my voice to the Lord for mercy. I pour out before him my complaint. Before him, I tell my trouble. When my spirit grows faint within me, it's you who watch over my way. In the path where I walk, people have hidden a snare for me. Look and see, there's no one at my right hand. No one is concerned for me. I have no refuge. No one cares for my life. I cry to you, Lord. I say, you're my refuge, my portion in the land of the living. Listen to my cry, for I'm in desperate need. Rescue me from those who pursue me, for they're too strong for me. Set me free from my prison that I may praise your name. Then the righteous will gather about me because of your goodness to me." Man, you want to talk about being afflicted and alone? David is in a hard, dark, cold place in his life. He's just hiding in these caves. And he goes, "God, I'm all alone. I don't have anybody. There's no one that's concerned about me. Nobody cares for me. There's nobody at my right hand." So it forces David to just turn to God. He goes, "But you're with me. You're my fortress. You're where I go to turn to help when there's enemies pursuing me, when there's people who want bad for me. I'm going to go to you, God." But he's crying out and going, "But I'm all alone." And here's what I think God is doing in this. I think God knows how to work in our seasons of affliction, because if there's pain, there's a purpose for the pain. And God's doing some things to refine David in these moments. To God, "I want you to understand, David, that the things that I've brought you to in this cave are going to serve for your good in the future. You can't see it right now, but I've got a plan for how I'm using this pain. And yes, David, you feel alone right now, but I've got a plan." And here's where we see God's plan unfold. The next thing that we're going to find in David's life is that God recognizes him in that cave, hurting and alone, and he's not going to leave him there, not by himself. So here's what we find. 2 Samuel chapter 22, it says, "David left Gath and he escaped to the cave of Adullam. And when his brothers and his father's household heard about it, they went down to him there. All of those who were in distress or in debt or who were discontented gathered around him, and he became their commander. About 400 men were with him." Right? Like, David becomes the first Robin Hood type figure. He's hiding out in the caves. He's not in Sherwood Forest. He's in the caves of Adullam. And all of a sudden, all these people start just flocking to him. His family shows up. His brothers are there. Then all these people who are in debt and who are discontented and who are distressed and they're enemies of the king themselves, they all come find David in these caves. And now all of a sudden, David's surrounded. And he's got people all around him. And here's what I love and what I see about this. When enemies pursued David, God surrounded him with friends and families and warriors who stood with him. Man, that's so important for us to see and to get from this. That God sees us in our affliction and he doesn't leave us alone. He sends community. He goes, "Hey, you're alone. You're facing some hardship. You're in a crisis right now. Let me send some friends to you. Let me send family to you. Let me send some warriors who are going to stand shoulder to shoulder with you. Let me put people in your life who are going to speak truth to you and who are going to say the hard things that you need to hear in this moment, because they love you very much. And they're going to stand shoulder to shoulder, and they're going to pray with you, and they're going to encourage you, and they're going to support you, and they're going to walk through every bit of this with you. You're not alone." And David finds that. He finds comfort in this community. But God doesn't even stop there. Right now, David's a young man on the run, but soon he's going to be king and he'll sit on the throne. And so God uses this time in the wilderness of affliction to teach David. And here's what he's doing. Did you notice who got sent to him? It's those who were in debt, who were discontented, who were struggling in life. Why does God send those kind of people? Why doesn't God send us people who are like, "We've got it all together and we got it all figured out and we're great. And I know your life's a mess, but our life is perfect. So we'll just pick you up and help you walk along." David's going, "My life is a mess. And then you guys showed up and y'all are all a mess." What's God doing in that? He's going, "David, you're a young man right now, but you're going to be king, and you need to know how to shepherd and love and care for people who are in debt and who are discontent and who are discouraged and who have hardships of their own in life. If you're going to lead my people, you have to understand what it looks like to be around people whose lives are jacked up. But David, they're going to stand with you. This is the beginning point of David's government. This is the beginning point of David's military. These are his leaders. And he's going to spend 7 years shoulder to shoulder with them in caves, going, I want to know how to walk with you through the hard stuff. And I want to help you to know what it looks like to follow in obedience to God, no matter what you're going through in your life. God's training David. He's leading him in these things. But not only this, this is one of those times that David can look and say, it was good for me to be afflicted. God was building up the things that were going to unite the country and defend the country. Then I want you to look at 1 Chronicles chapter 12. And I'm going to skip some verses here because we're going to read verses 18 through 22. But a lot of them just contain a ton of names that you don't want to hear me read and that I may not be able to pronounce. So we're going to skip over some of them. But I want to read the important aspects of the passage here for what we're talking about this morning. 1 Chronicles chapter 12, verse 1. These were the men who also came to David at Ziklag while he was banished from the presence of Saul, the son of Kish. They were among the warriors who helped him in battle. They were armed with bows and they were able to shoot arrows or to sling stones, right-handed or left-handed. They were relatives of Saul from the tribe of Benjamin. Skip down to verse 8. Some Gadites defected to David at his stronghold in the wilderness. They were brave warriors, ready for battle and able to handle the shield and the spear. Their faces were like the faces of lions and they were as swift as gazelles in the mountains. Verse 14, these Gadites were army commanders. The least was a match for 100. And the greatest for 1,000. So he goes, these are the kind of guys that God's bringing to David. One of them who was the weakest in this military unit could take 100 guys. And the bravest and the strongest of them could take 1,000. You're going, this is who God's bringing to David. It says, it was they who crossed the Jordan the first month when it was overflowing all its banks. And they were put to flight, everyone living in the valleys to the east and to the west. Other Benjamites and some men from Judah also came to David in his stronghold. David went out to meet them and said to them, if you have come to me in peace to help me, I'm ready for you to join me. But if you've come to betray me to my enemies when my hands are free from violence, may the God of our ancestors see it and judge you. And then the Spirit of the Lord came on Amasai, chief of the 30, and he said, we're yours, David. We're with you, son of Jesse. Success, success to you and success to those who help you, for your God will help you. So David received them and made them leaders of his raiding bands. Then skip down to verse 22. Day after day, men came to help David until he had a great army like the army of the Lord. So God's at work even in the darkest season of David's life. And I want to offer some encouragement to you when you go through times that it feels like the world is against you and you have enemies that spring up in your life. So let's just make this practical for just a minute. We need people in our lives who will stand with us, fight with us, and speak truth to us. And so if you're taking notes this morning, I want you to see this, that in David's distress, God sent David a community. And when you face affliction, and when you have hurt and pain in your life, I want to beg you this morning not to do what I've seen people do so often in the church. And that's to know that they have something hard going on in their life, and they withdraw from community. And I'm just going to back up. I don't want anybody else to know what I'm going through. I don't want anybody else to know the pain that I experience. I don't want to be a burden to anybody else. I'll just go through this one alone. This is just going to be me and God. And I think what we see in David's life is God going, hey, you can run away from your enemy, but I'm going to surround you with community. That's why we structure things the way that we do here at Grace Fellowship. It's why we have life groups and teams and ministry leaders. It's why our staff and our elders shepherd this church. Is because we want you to know that you're not alone no matter what you face, no matter what hardship you go through, no matter how difficult things get in your life, no matter what enemy comes against you. We're here. And we want to invite you into community. We want to say this is important for your life. It's needed. Don't back away. Don't disengage. Move in. Let people stand shoulder to shoulder with you as friends and family and warriors who are going to be able to walk with you through it all. And then I want us to see this. And we need to surround ourselves with God-fearing people who are going to love you and walk with you. So pray for godly friends who's going to hold you up when you feel alone and under attack. Listen to people who are willing to speak the truth in love. Like, I can only imagine how much David's life changed in these 7 years. from being a young man who knew he had the promise of God to be king and seeing those things unfulfilled in his life, but knowing the promise still remained until the day that he would be put on the throne. See, I would have written this story a lot differently. I would have had Samuel anoint David as king, and then something crazy would have happened to Saul almost immediately, and he would be gone, and then David would elevate to the place of king in Israel. Quick, simple, nice, and clean, right? That's how we would write the story. God goes, hey, I'm going to give you a lot of years to just be in service to a king that doesn't like you. Then I'm going to send you out into the desert, and I'm going to let you experience affliction, but I'm going to surround you and I'm going to be with you. And then David, I'm going to elevate you to the throne, and you're going to know how to lead my people and shepherd my people, and you're going to know how to defend this country, and you're going to know how to govern well because of the desert, because of the caves. And so in our lives, we might look at some things and go, God, this feels like a moment that I'm just in the wilderness. I even feel like I'm hiding in a cave right now. And it feels like there are people who are against me and nothing seems right. And God's going, I've still got some things I'm teaching you here in these moments. There's still good that I'm going to bring out of this. So hold fast in these moments. He's growing you. He's developing you. Your pain is not without a purpose. God's going to do something incredible as you follow him in your pain. And so for today, we're going to close by looking at one more passage of scripture. As I was writing this week, there was just so much in this part of David's life that I was like, I am never going to get through all of this in one Sunday. So next week, we're going to come back and we're going to pick up with David. And we're going to talk about enemies again. But here's the difference for next week and this week. The tables are going to turn. And on multiple occasions, David's going to find himself in a place where his enemy is at his disposal. What do you do then? When you have an opportunity to get revenge against somebody who's caused you pain. So we're going to find that out next week. We're going to see what David does. But I want us to close this morning looking at a familiar passage of scripture to most of us, I would imagine. Psalm chapter 23, verse 5. David writes and says, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. Like when David is surrounded by people who want to kill him, he looks around and he goes, God, you stacked a table right here. And you put food on it. And you put drink on it. And you gave me entertainment. And he writes this imagery of saying, there's a table that's spread out before me, right in the presence of my enemies. Now here's what David's not saying, and I want you to hear this. You don't have to invite your enemies to sit at the table. But he goes, God, you're good. When my enemies are all around, you feed me. You take care of me. You protect me. You provide for me. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely, God, your goodness and your mercy will follow me now all the days of my life. And I'll dwell in the house of the Lord forever and forever. So church, no matter what you're going through, and no matter where you find yourself this morning, know that God is walking with you. And if you can learn to say, it was good for me to be afflicted because I learned how to obey your decrees, then God will have done some incredible things in your life to build you up for the next step that he has for you. Thanks so much for checking out our message today. We hope you are challenged and blessed by it. We want to invite you to come and worship with us in person if you live in the Tri-Cities area. We meet on Sunday mornings at 9 and 10:45 a.m. at One Fellowship Point in Kingsport, Tennessee. You can also get more information about us from our website or our mobile app. Have a great day.